How's it going, Mr. Reitzel?
What's up, Mr. Wagner? Good to be back. How are you?
Yeah, we took a little hiatus last week. Lots going on in the world today.
This is true.
So I've had a couple people ask me why the Fandom Podcast Network decided not to put out any programming last week. And, you know, Kevin and I had a good talk about it. And there was a couple of reasons. One, I think just what was going on in the world last week was something where I think it was history making and people needed to be paying attention to it, whether they agreed with everything that was going on or not, whatever their opinion was. I think it was good to have eyes on it. And two, I think everybody's focus was there, and that's a good thing. And when Kevin, when we discussed it too, one of the other things was, you know, we have a lot of great creators who put in a lot of hard work around here too. And we wanted to honor them by not putting out stuff when people's minds are maybe not in the right place to listen to a podcast.
Agreed. It was time to reflect what was happening in front of us in reality. And, you know, I think that there were a lot more things to spend our time with, to recollect, to ponder, to talk about, to discuss, to protest, whatever it is that you wanted to do. That was a lot more important than putting out podcasts. And we weren't the only ones. There was a lot of other people that were taking a break from that and giving us all time to reflect on what was happening right in front of us.
Plus, I think it's fair to say too, Kevin, that really, I think for a lot of people, and I don't just speak for everybody here at the Fandom Podcast Network, but a lot of podcasters, maybe their heart wasn't in it last week. I mean, it was hard to sit there and have a podcast about fandom or Star Wars or Star Trek or sports or whatever's out there when everything that was going on was going on. And I think, you know, we've been through a lot this year already. So I think it was time to maybe have a little break and give us all a chance to kind of take a step back, reset ourselves and, you know, get through this. But I think it's time to start having a little fun again, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously don't forget what's been happening. Pay attention and, be supportive and, you know, we wanted to be responsible to a certain degree. And, it was nice to take, time for ourselves to, you know, reflect and comment and, take part of, what was happening.
Yeah. So, but with that, you know, hopefully all of our wonderful listeners are staying safe and getting through all this and having discussions that maybe need to be had. And, you know, like I said, at the end of the day, we're here just to have some fun with each other, sharing the things we enjoy. And at the end of the day, the biggest thing is we respect each other. And that's always been our mantra. So, Kevin, we got a lot of fun things to talk about. We got a little verses. We got some stuff we've seen. We got some news. So I think without further ado, let's do this thing.
This is the Culture Clash.
So, welcome to Culture Clash number 172. It's slowly creeping up there. 200's kind of showing up on the horizon there, Mr. Reitzel.
I'll start looking at that when we get like into the, you know, high 80s, high 180s, you know.
Okay, well, I'm just trying to be positive there. But you know what? We got a lot of good stuff. We've been gone for a week, but we got a ton of programming coming out this week. And Kevin, would you be so glad to tell everybody where they can find all of the great programming here on the Fandom Podcast Network?
Yes, you can find Culture Clash and all of our other wonderful shows under the Fandom Podcast Network umbrella at fpnet.podbean.com. Fandom Podcast Network is also on that Podbean app you can download. Fandom Podcast Network is also on Apple Podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. We can also find us on Facebook under Fandom Podcast Network. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter, Fandom Podcast Network. My name is Kevin. I am on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix. And Kyle, where can we find you?
You can find me at Twitter at AKyleW and on Instagram at AKyleFandom. And you might want to explain to people why I sound a little muffled all of a sudden, Kevin.
This is true. You can support us two other ways. You can support us over at TeePublic. If you can search Fandom Podcast Network over there, you'll find a bunch of great apparel that you could put our show's logos on. And of course, right now, they have masks, of course. And you can find some great logos to put on masks. Kyle has a Fandom Podcast Network mask, and it looks great. It's comfortable, right, Kyle?
Very comfortable, very lightweight. Right. Not one of the, not super heavy, or just like some of these masks, you feel like you can't even breathe through them because they're so heavy.
That's cool. Good to know. Good to know. So support us there. Support us at TeePublic, which is Fandom Podcast Network. You can find some great, awesome apparel items there. Other way to support us is through Apple Podcast and iTunes review. Please leave us a rated review. Search Apple Podcast or iTunes, and then search Fandom Podcast Network. And then if you like Culture Clash or any other shows there, give us a shout out there and leave a review. We, of course, love 5-star reviews, but we love reviews in general. And more reviews we have, the more presence that we will get under that search algorithm they have there. So help us out there.
Absolutely. So, you know what? I'm just so excited for our first news article, Kevin. So can you take us in there? I want to get started. I'm excited.
Let's news!
Let's news!
Kevlin, it is time once again to be excellent to each other.
Did you say Kevlin?
I might have said Kevlin. It's a podcast. It's a live podcasting. What do you expect?
My name's Kevin, man. Come on.
Well, but it's still time to be excellent to each other.
This is very true. I'm really excited about this.
Yeah. It's time to face the music because the first Bill and Ted Face the Music trailer has arrived, Mr. Reitzel.
Oh, so good, dude. It is so good. So good.
I mean, and this is everything a trailer should be. It gives you an idea of the story, but doesn't give away too much.
It seems to me that stuff doesn't go accordingly. That's why Bill and Ted Face the Music, as the title says. They didn't quite make that song that was supposed to bring the world together. And they kind of faced some type of tribunal, it looked like, at the beginning of that thing. But I got a really kick, big kick, when they visit themselves, their prison selves.
That was great.
That was great. When I first watched the video, the trailer, I didn't quite get it until like at the very end. I'm like, oh my God, that's them in makeup.
It was a little dark, but that's okay.
So good.
What I liked about this trailer is, like I said, it gave you just a little bit of nuggets. And I hope we don't get too many more trailers, but one thing I did like, it was nice to see Death in the trailer.
Yes, I heard that he was coming back, and I'm very curious to see what happens with Death and how he and Bill and Ted are getting along.
But no, I'm very excited about this, and I don't think it's – yeah, I think it's kind of a little bit planned for this trailer to come out right now. I think it's a good thing that this trailer came out right now.
Could this movie have – a bigger impact than expected for certain reasons, you know, just about being excellent to each other and working together and peace and harmony.
That, and I think it's just a feel good movie that a lot of people need right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
So the next topic though, Kevin, I know is involving something close to your heart, something very special to you. And that is Bruce Campbell and Evil Dead. Bruce Campbell, in an interview recently, talked about the fact that, yes, there will be a fourth Evil Dead film. He spoke with Empire Magazine, and in the interview, he said that Lee Cronin, who directed the 2019 horror film The Hole in the Ground, is Sam Raimi's choice to direct the film, which also has a name. It's called Evil Dead Now. Sam Raimi handpicked Lee. He did this great movie, The Hole in the Ground, and we're going to get that sucker out as soon as practical. The film, however, will not feature Campbell's Ash. He says he has retired the character.
How is he returning then?
I'm wondering. It's Bruce Campbell. He can do whatever he wants when it comes to Evil Dead. You can be a whole new character.
I'm confused. I thought he retired from the character. So is he not reprising
Ash? He's not reprising Ash. He just wants to have different heroes, different heroines. He says this one, he wants to be a little more dynamic, keep up with the series current. So I'm wondering if there's going to be some tie-ins to Ash versus Evil Dead as well.
Hmm.
With Bruce Campbell and Sam Raimi and Evil Dead, Kevin, the only thing you know for sure is that nothing's for sure.
This is true. I'm very curious.
So other exciting news, and I mean, we've known this, but it's always nice when you hear it from the man himself. Jon Favreau has confirmed Mandalorian will release on time in October, Kevin. I think we needed to hear this. It's always good when you get reassurance from Mr. Favreau.
This is true. I don't think this was in doubt, though, but it is good to get insurance. My only issue is that it's not coming out earlier.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, the gallery has been a fun watch.
Yes, yes.
In fact, let's talk about that, because I think the last episode was quite special as it dealt with the practical effects of The Mandalorian.
Yes, and there's one that came out just after that, too.
Yes.
But the practical effects one was special because we got a really good behind the scenes of Baby Yoda, a.k.a. the child, as well as what's the name of Nick Nolte's voiced character? Queel, right?
Yeah, Queel.
You get to see the woman that played Queel as in the costume. And a bunch of other cool practical stuff. And it was really, really great to see Baby Yoda full puppet and come to life full puppet and not be CG.
Yeah, no. And it was, what was even better was we got to see where Werner Herzog really fell in love with Baby Yoda.
This is true. And look what I got. I got Baby Yoda in the mail today. Look at that. Woo. He's so cute.
Ah. Wait. You put your Baby Yoda in a box and shipped it? You allowed that?
This is the Mattel version. This isn't the smaller plush one. This is the little bit larger one that's probably closer to his full size, actual height. And yes, he's adorable, isn't he? Look how cute he is. He's so cute.
Hey, you should watch him. He looks like he might be reaching for your podcast controls.
I know, right?
Another thing that I'm somewhat excited for, there's still a chance this movie's going to get moved back. I've heard that a lot in the last few weeks, but it's getting closer, and Godzilla vs. Kong is been rated as a PG-13 movie, Kevin. I know maybe you're not as excited about this as I am, but this is another movie I'm just looking forward to have a good, fun popcorn flick, because we haven't had one in a while.
This is true. Is this movie done?
I think except for effects. I think that's what they're thinking is they might delay this just because everything's so...
I mean, if it gets a rating, it has to be pretty much done, right?
Yeah. I think, like I said, except for some effects issues, but I'm wondering if it's not going to get pushed back because it just doesn't want to get caught in the log jam of stuff that's going to end up coming out in November, December right now as it stands.
Right. Yeah.
So, which reminds me, Kevin,
by the way, I am looking forward to actually seeing this because, I want to see where this world takes us. But I find interesting about the world is not just the monsters fighting, but I like the world itself. And the mysterious, what's the name of the mysterious Monarch. Corporation?
Monarch. Yeah.
I want to see more of that. And then I also want to see what they're going to tease for next time.
Yeah, I agree. I'm looking forward to this. I like Godzilla King of the Monsters. I know not a lot that people were kind of turned off on it by the human factor of it, but I thought it was fun.
Yes. I thought
the monsters Agreed. Looked great. The battles were fun. So I did enjoy it, but speaking of the box office, the early reports are now coming out that because of COVID-19 and the drop, their box offices are expected to take at least a 50% drop from 2019. Kevin, I don't think this is that shocking.
I find this funny, not funny, funny, but at least 50. I would have said a lot lower than that.
You mean higher?
It's weird, but... Yeah, I thought it would be worse than that, actually, to be honest with you. You know,
so, I mean, yeah, I was going to ask you, though, because I know here in Florida this past Friday, the governor ruled that movie theaters could start opening at 50% capacity. I haven't even really looked to see if mine are start opening yet because there's really not anything in the theaters to necessarily go see yet. Has there been any word out in your area in California about theaters
All of our theaters have signs we will be opening soon, and they show Tenet, Mulan, and some other film. And Tenet was projected to release in July. I think they're waiting till July, and I think it's going to be a similar thing. We just had restaurants open up. There still is like the social distancing. You can sit inside, outside, but you'll see like the tables are a certain length apart. So I don't know. It's like it really depends. But I think they'll open up in July, because I think Tenet's still trying to open up in July. But we have had a very popular attendance at our local drive-in.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because I know that's been a big push in your area.
Yeah, there is a company called West Wind that has bought up several drive-ins, about four in California, two in Nevada, and at least one in Arizona, and been running these drive-ins. And they've been showing mostly older films or ones that were released earlier this year, and a bunch of kids' films as well. Like on Tuesday nights, they'll have family night, and they charge about $8.75 a person in a car, you know, $8.75, kids like are under a certain age, like around five something. And then on family nights, adults are like $5.50 or something, but they always do the double feature. And I just recently saw Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and The Last Crusade back to back. And then on like Friday nights and Saturday nights, they'll do like whatever double feature, like they might, if they have like a kid's film, they'll have another kid's film back to back. The other time I went and saw Jumanji and Bad Boys 3, Jumanji 2 and Bad Boys 3. But then they'll show like a movie even much later, like at 1 a.m, like a horror type film. Like they showed The Hunt and then some other horror film. I forgot what it was. But they've been open every night, and they plan on being open night. So
very cool. I'm looking forward to movie theaters reopening. I'm ready to go to a movie, Kevin.
Yeah, me too, man. Me too.
Lastly in the news, the story that just won't die. And this story just feels like it's getting more and more bizarre. A couple weeks ago, we reported about Ruby Rose leaving Batwoman, and that then they were going to recast the character. Well, now they're not going to recast the character at all. Instead, they're going to replace the character with a whole new actress who will not be the Kate Kane character that Ruby Rose
still played. A Batwoman though.
Still, we'll be taking over the mantle of Batwoman, but it's going to be a whole new character and not the same character. This is just getting bizarre, because I mean, Kate Kane is still Batwoman in the comics.
Who else is Batwoman?
That's been the only person to be Batwoman.
So are they're not pulling from something in the comics? They're going to just make up someone new?
They're just going to make up a brand new character to take over
the mantle. Batgirl.
Batgirl is still Barbara Gordon right now in the comics. Okay. But I mean, this is just weird. I don't know if I'm feeling real good about the future of this show.
I think that Ruby Rose, I don't think she left on her own. I think she was probably fired. They're just not saying it.
Well,
there's too much weirdness going on there. There's something else there that I'm just not quite feeling.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's more than just, oh, well, she couldn't handle she got burned out by the hours of filming. Because I'm sorry, when you step into a role like that, you should know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. However, Kevin, in the meantime, we have seen a few things. So once again, it is time to
buy it, stream it, or unsee it.
So we got a few things here, Kevin, but I found something very fun on Netflix over the weekend. And that is Magic for Humans. Are you familiar with this at all?
I've heard of it, but I'm kind of confused by the title.
Well, it's three seasons long. Each season's about six episodes. And it focuses on magician Justin Willman. And each episode kind of has a theme to it. One episode is maybe like about time. Another's about family. Another's about fear. Another's about technology. And he's doing tricks based off of what the theme of the episode is. And it's tricks on the street. He goes to different groups and does tricks. This guy is phenomenal. I don't know if I've seen a better magician, Kevin.
Is it more sleight of hand stuff, or does he use like props and stuff like that? Like
all of the above.
I've never heard of this guy before.
I hadn't either, but he's funny. He actually has some lessons in the shows that he talks about, and his magic is just mind-blowing, literally more than any other magician. Like, what the hell? How did... No, he couldn't have done that. There's
that's
no
a big,
way.
That's a big statement, Cotton.
Is I trust me, I know it is. But for instance, he did a trick with a tennis ball where the guy signed a tennis ball, and then the tennis ball ended up in a sealed brand new can of peanut butter that somebody else was holding.
Hmm.
I'm like, no, how is that not, how that's just not possible. But I mean, and the places he does tricks and the kind of tricks he does, I mean, it's like I said, it's one of the best.
Why is it called magic for humans as opposed to animals or something like that?
I think it's just kind of something to attract people in. He does all his tricks he does are with other people. There's not like tricks with animals or anything like
very
that.
Cool.
I think he's trying to do things to also kind of relate to human nature.
So, okay. Gotcha.
But it's one of those things. It's you start watching it and you get drawn in by his abilities, his magic. And you're just like, what is this guy going to do next? And you end up just breezing through it. But yeah, a phenomenal show, a lot of fun, and a great way to take your mind off of everything that's been going on the last few months. It's just fun, kick back and enjoy it.
Cool.
So now the first thing you have to talk about is something I talked about a little bit ago, but a movie I really liked in Code 8, which of course has the Amell, Stephen Amell and his cousin Robbie Amell.
Yeah, this you had mentioned this movie and it resonated with me when I we'd obviously seen the great new show that Robbie has been in called Upload on Amazon, which I highly recommend. It's one of the best new shows I've seen. And so I thought I'd check this out. And he plays a super-powered construction worker who falls in with a group of criminals in order to raise the funds to help his ill mother. And this is where this is in an alternate reality where people with abilities, whether they're superhero powers, have been kind of part of society for a long time now. But in either current day or in the near future, because of the abuse that some of these people have been using these powers, their powers are being regulated and you have to be licensed and all this kind of stuff. And in some, you know, in a lot of the police force who now have like these drones that come down out of these hover drones and are like these robot police officers to help maintain the peace of some of these renegade power users. He's trying to help his ill mother who's dying. And he has the power of like electricity. And Robbie Amell is approached by his cousin, the other Amell,
Stephen Amell, who played Green Arrow for so long.
Yes.
And what was interesting about this film is it's interesting to see Stephen Amell as not the good guy.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. You know, he's not like the bad guy, but he's definitely not a good guy. And then they talk about a heist that happens and it leads to a heist and stuff like that. And of course things go wrong and there's backstabbing and blah, blah, blah. I'd say definitely stream it. It was a good movie. It was fun.
Yeah. And I like the fact that when it leaves off, it definitely leaves itself open for coming back to this world, which I would be all for.
I was going to mention that. Yeah. I would love to see where they go with us in the world. It's an easy watch. It's only an hour and 38 minutes. It's on Netflix and yeah, it's good. I liked it.
Now, the next thing you got to talk about too, Kevin, is something I do want to watch, and I got a little sidetracked by Magicians over the weekend, but Space Force is out.
Space Force, yes. It also just made news.
I saw
because
this.
Netflix was quicker on the draw to copyright the name Space Force, and it looks like the U.S. military Air Force weren't quite quick enough to... keep that name legally. So I'm curious to see what happens with that, because as soon as our current president's mentioned that he wants to have a Space Force, Netflix jumped on it right away. People that were behind the scenes and the creators of The Office, which of course then brought in Steve Carell, who's also one of the creators and writers and producers. He is this newly minted four-star general of the Air Force. And he is unwillingly, but does have to do his job. He's appointed the new general in charge of putting this Space Force together. And 10 episodes, about 30 to 40 minutes apiece, easy watch. stars John Malkovich and Ben Schwartz. John Malkovich is his main partner because he's the scientist, and Ben Schwartz is his PR executive, I guess. Jimmy O. Yang, who is famous now from his roles in like Crazy Rich Asians, and he's also a big stand-up comedian. He's one of the chief scientists as well. And he is a he's a father who's technically married, played by Lisa Kudrow, who is in prison. And his daughter, who is forced to live with him in this secret military base in Colorado. And each episode is the struggles of trying to get stuff together. But then they realize they're kind of in a new Space Force race with China. Things get weird when China starts to, like, you know, sabotage things. And they try, and through the whole series, the first season, they're trying to get a group of people onto the moon. And other people are there from other countries as well. So there's a little thing going on there. It's very, very funny. John Malkovich was great. Very, very un-Malkovich-y. I'm not used to him seeing in this type of role. So I really did enjoy him in that. And some of the supporting characters are great. Some of the best scenes, though, are are when they have this council of generals from each division, like the Air Force, which he represents, the Marines, the Navy, blah, 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 blah. And you'll recognize certain names that are ahead of that. And then remember the gentleman that played, I think he was the chief engineer in Orville, the kind of larger plump guy. Yes,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's the head of the Coast Guard, and they keep giving him crap for being part of the Coast Guard. you'll recognize some of the people there. It's very funny. I really enjoyed it. It was a fun watch, and I'm kind of curious to see where it goes from now.
Yeah, very cool. So you'd definitely give it a stream it?
Definitely a stream it, yes.
Now, the last film you've got, Kevin, is one I'm actually incredibly interested in because I saw the trailer of it on Netflix over the weekend, and this looks like it's right up my alley.
Yes. So new movie on Netflix that is called The Last Days of American Crime. And it stars Edgar Ramirez, who's been in a lot of stuff. He was in Gold with Matthew McConaughey. He played Bodie in the 2015 remake of Point Break, Deliver Us from Evil. He's also, I guess, in the new Jungle Cruise. It's coming out now next year. He was in American Crime Story. He played Gianni Versace in that. He was also in Bright, a counselor, bunch of stuff. He's done a lot of stuff. And this is a story that takes place in the near future where the U.S. government is working on this signal that they can send out to basically, if you have thoughts of anything of wrongdoing and crime, your mind will basically, it's kind of like someone putting off a loud alarm inside your head and it becomes painful and can eventually kill you. And it just immobilizes you. And so there's a countdown to when this thing goes into place. So there's a lot of crime going on right current time because people are trying to get away with stuff while it happens. This movie's rated MA for obvious reasons. Sex, nudity, violence, language, stuff like that. And it's a very gritty action kind of actioneer. It's done by Oliver Megatron. Do you know that name?
His name rings a bell.
He's a French director, and you've seen him stuff. He's done Transporter films. He did Taken 2, Columbiana. What else has he done? He did one of the Taxi films. He's kind of one of the new up and coming actioneer directors. But Edgar Ramirez's character, he's this criminal who gets in league with these other criminals to try to pull this heist off. That includes stealing money, but also disrupting the signal. And a lot of people are trying to escape to Canada as well to get away from this kind of this regime that now that the American government is putting down. And they're America has blocked off borders, so it's like really hard to get in unless you have got the right credentials and stuff like that. But when I was watching the movie, I was trying to figure out where it was filmed. I'm like, okay, is that Toronto? Is that Vancouver? Filmed entirely in South Africa, Johannesburg and Cape Town. And it was, like I said, it's very violent, very gritty. It's sometimes tough to watch because of how gritty stuff is. And it's a little depressing, but, the action and the overall look of the film is pretty cool. I do recommend it. It's a stream it.
Okay. Very cool. Yeah. The trailer highly intrigued me. So I'm definitely going to be,
there's not a lot. Charlton Copley, what's his name from District 9? He has a small role in it. But most of the people other than Edgar Ramirez are a bunch of new names to me, because most of these people I think are actors and actresses from either England or South Africa. And South Africa has got a booming film industry right now.
Yeah,
that's where they filmed Dread and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Very cool. Well, we're going to take a quick break here, let you listen to what else is going on around the Fandom Podcast Network, and hopefully help you find some things to feed your ears.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to our other awesome shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast. Couch Potato Theater, our podcast celebrating our favorite movies. Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback podcast discussing a whole year in movies. The End Zone, our NFL podcast. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast. The Union Federation, our Star Trek and Orville podcast. Hair Metal, the 1980s rock metal podcast. Type 40, our Doctor Who podcast. Lethal Mullet, a 1980s action film podcast. What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, and our newest show, Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, a deep dive into the final frontier with host Mark Newbold and Adam P. O'Brien. You can enjoy all of these great Fandom Podcast Network shows on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The FPNet can also be found on the Podbean app. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and now iHeartRadio. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook. You can also email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can also find the Fandom Podcast Network on Instagram and Twitter. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
Well, hopefully you're enjoying the stuff we're putting out. And like I said, we got a lot of stuff that's going to be coming out as we play a little catch up from taking a week off. And we got some very cool things coming. But Kevin, can you feel it? It's in the air. There's that
I can must feel it smell coming in the air tonight. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, but if you sing that too loudly, Mike Tyson's going to show up, and we know what happens when Mike Tyson shows up around here. Yes, but once again, it is time to get ready for the throwdown, because once again, it's time for another round of Verses here on Culture
Clash.
Verses,
baby, yes.
So, now the last Verses we did, Kevin, was Nicole Kidman versus Julia Roberts, and I think we had pretty much figured out the winner before the end of the episode, but you want to just revisit it real quick?
Yeah, I mean, when it came to our comments on social media, it was kind of even. Maybe Julia Roberts with a few more votes. Then we had that wonderful discussion that Ryan Stampfli said that he felt that Nicole Kidman was a Tom Cruise mojo vampire, and that when she married Tom Cruise, his choice of movies weren't as good as they could have been. But I think when it comes out, though, it's Julia Roberts. And we also feel that she's probably a better actress, but she was more of kind of America's sweetheart, and a lot of people really enjoyed that. So I say Julia Roberts is the winner.
Yeah, no, I would go with that, too. I think Julia just has a few more iconic films under her belt as well. And yeah, she was America's sweetheart for a very long time. But you have brought forth the Verses this week, Mr. Reitzel. That is incredibly intriguing.
Yes. Yeah, so when we were throwing out ideas of people or persons or things to put together for Verses, obviously we chose action, or we chose actors and actresses. One of the things that's really, really important to movies is the music. And we knew that wait a minute, let's put some composers together. And we pretty much agreed that we weren't going to put anyone up against John Williams. Because yeah. John Williams is up at the top. He's got Oscars to prove it. He's got accolades to prove it. His work is just mind-blowing.
I think we only had one person we even felt like could even remotely touch that stratosphere of John Williams, and maybe that was Hans Zimmer. Like I said, remotely touch the stratosphere. I didn't say get up there with John Williams. Yeah,
I mean, the two people we're going to talk about now, you could maybe even put one of them up against Hans Zimmer, but we felt that these two composers were very well matched, and when you have two that are very evenly matched, it makes for a much more interesting conversation and debate. So the two composers that we put together are James Horner and Alan Silvestri. So we picked about 15, 20 movies that each of them have done, composed and done scores for. And Kyle, why don't you do James Horner? Read off the ones for James Horner.
Yes, because once again, we're going to hit and that's not the tale of the tape. It's the tale of the music. So with James Horner, we're talking Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, Krull, Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, Cocoon, Commando, Aliens, The Name of the Rose, Willow, Field of Dreams, Legends of the Fall, A Beautiful Mind, Titanic, Glory, The Rocketeer, The Perfect Storm, Legends of the Fall, Braveheart, Apollo 13, Zorro Movies, and Avatar, plus another film that a couple of people called us out about, but we'll get to that here in a little bit.
Yeah. And keep in mind too, James Horner has since passed away. He died in 2015. I think it was a plane crash. Was that what it was?
I think you might be correct there.
Yeah. Yeah. So for Alan Silvestri, here is a big chunk of his work, Romancing the Stone, Flight of the Navigator, Back to the Future movies, Predator 1 and 2, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Overboard, The Abyss, The Bodyguard, Forrest Gump, Super Mario Brothers, The Quick and the Dead, Judge Dredd, Contact, Castaway, Serendipity, The Polar Express, Van Helsing, Captain America, The First Avenger, The Avenger Films, and Ready Player One.
So this is tough. This is
very, very tough. So we had a lot of great comments on there, and we'll start off by my lovely fiance, Erin Gill. She says, "You had me at Braveheart," so James Horner. When I was talking with Erin about the soundtracks, she really loves the Braveheart soundtrack. She says it's actually one of her favorites, and I think we discussed that when we had that special time warp talking about movie soundtracks and scores. She brought that up. Ryan Stanfley said Horner all the way with a gif of Commando going, "Let's party." I can say fellow Sestra now, since I've seen some episodes of Orphan Black. Haley Stoddard said, "Oh man, tough choice here. Actually, as I enjoy both immensely, but I'm going to go with Silvestri." Jennifer Walk says Silvestri, probably because I've watched the movies he scored several times over the years. Horner is a lot of the movies were one-time views for me, Forrest Gump, Cap America being two of my favorites. Brandon Beatty said there's no contest. There is just a small sampling. Titanic, Star Trek, Krull, Cocoon, Aliens, Field of Dreams, blah, 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 blah. He also mentioned Apocalypto, which was not in here, and of course, Glory. And then he says... and of course, Glory, perhaps one of the greatest movie scores ever created. Two Oscars and 8 more nominations. Ladies and gentlemen, James Horner. That's a good argument there, Brandon. Brad McNaughton said Horner. That's all he said. Stephen McLeod said James Horner because other guys a punk. Kidding. Braveheart pretty much nails it, but Apollo 13, Aliens, and The Search for Spock say no more. Norman says the tiebreaker for me is the Rocketeer soundtrack. Who is that?
That was James Horner.
James Horner. Okay. And then, Sarah Woloski from, Skywalking Through Neverland. I'm really glad that she, replied because she's huge into movie scores and stuff like that. And this is one of her fortes, her being a musician herself. She says these composers are pretty evenly matched and there are reasons for either to win. Horner crafts scores that are generally listenable, but from beginning to end. The entire soundtrack is a joy. The Mask of Zorro, Titanic, Apollo 13 come to mind. So Silvestri creates the most beautiful themes and sprinkles them throughout the score, like Contact or Forrest Gump. However, when you're listening to a Silvestri score, you almost have to skip certain tracks to get to the good stuff, because some can be boring. The Abyss and Contact come to mind. But overall, I think I'll have to go with Silvestri because of the absolute gem that Back to the Future films are in the terms of their scores. Amazing. I thought that was a very good comparison, both of them. And I think she's spot on when it comes to those.
Now, before we go any further, though, we did get called out about something we left out of James Horner's listing.
I'll get to that. I'm not done with the comments here. Let me get to that. Okay. Ryan replied to Sarah saying, "That's a really good point on Back to the Future. Rethinking my choice now. I was watching A Million Ways to Die in the West the other day, and my daughter overheard that bit of Back to the Future music in the Doc Brown scene from the next room and came running to see." As you alluded to, Matthew Clifton said, "You missed a very important one, Kevin. James Horner and American Tail. The score is absolute perfection and has aged like a fine wine." And I Sarah said, "Oh man, I adore this score." And I replied saying, "I couldn't put all of their work on the list. It was hard to nail down the number that we had, but that was a good call." And then Stephen McLeod, of course, said Horner again. So that is the comments here. Let me see. One for Horner, two for Horner. Let's see here. Da-da-da-da-da. Three, four, five. It looks like Horner wins here. I wouldn't say a landslide, but it looks like Horner wins here. Silvestri got a few less votes than they did. So according to our fans on social media, Horner wins. But Kyle, what say you?
This is maybe the toughest of these verses. This might actually even be tougher than Hanks in Washington, because
I would agree.
When I just look at James Horner, the ones that really stand out to me is Alien's score. I love the Willow score. Field of Dreams. The Rocketeer is amazing. Yeah, obviously Braveheart. I do love Apollo 13 and the Avatar. Avatar has a wonderful score to it.
Yeah.
But like Sarah said, as great as all those are, I don't know if any of them tops Back to the Future as far as scores go.
Yeah.
And really that those, when you hear that Avengers theme play.
That right there, Kyle, was the deciding vote for me, because I'm looking at both of these and they're really, really tough. And of course, Back to the Future films are that's where you have to kind of like decide how you can outdo yourself. And I'm not saying the Avenger scores outdoes them, but there is nothing like those scores. When you hear that Avenger music, and I don't know if people have come to really appreciate those yet. I think they will more in time, but those Avenger scores, I didn't mean to cut you off there, man. Feel free to go on, but man, you're right.
Well, and here's something to me for a score. And this is what the only thing I can call this is the John Williams effect. There are just certain things from a score, and you know, throughout history, like sports have used movie scores and other things have used movie scores for dramatic effect. When you just hear certain notes hit and start, it immediately takes you there. And as great as all the Horner scores are, there's none of them that, like, if I hear the notes of it, it takes me right to that movie. But if I hear those Back to the Future notes, or I hear that Avenger notes, or even that Predator theme.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just takes me not only to what I'm watching, but to that movie. And with that said, I think James Horner has the bigger body of good work. But what Alan Silvestri has done when he's hit it has been iconic. And I don't know if you, as great as the James Horner stuff is, I don't know if any of the stuff he's done screams iconic to me like Back to the Future does and the Avengers scene does.
I couldn't have said it better. I would agree with you. There's something about that music and the Avenger films, and it was also Captain America First Avenger that he did. But I'm also looking back at, and I just recently watched Judge Dredd. That was a good soundtrack too. The Forrest Gump one, The Abyss.
Forrest Gump's another one. You hear those first three notes from Forrest Gump, and you know.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's definitely the Back to the Future. Even the Predator movies are good too. So, Horner wins, but our favorite is Alan Silvestri.
Yeah, like I said, I think Sarah hit it on the head. You don't go wrong with either of them.
Yeah.
So that is it for the throwdown this week. It was a painful one to watch, and the truth of the matter is, there might be a winner, but nobody lost in this battle.
Yeah.
So now, Kevin, you hit us with a great idea. And what I really liked about the idea for the next verse is you put a little spin on it.
Yes. Yes.
And I think it's very appropriate.
Yeah. Instead of putting these two actors together and pitting, you know, all of their work, I thought, wait a minute, these two actors are known as our action heroes. And I was wondering, wouldn't it be kind of fun to see who had the better action hero career, or who is your favorite maybe? And so I thought, well, what would be two iconic action heroes? And I thought, let's put Arnold Schwarzenegger's action films up against Sylvester Stallone's. So why don't you read off Schwarzenegger's real quick, and then we'll take it from there, and I'm going to put it on social media and see what they say.
Yep. So with Schwarzenegger, we got Hercules in New York, the Conan movies, the Terminator movies, Red Sonja, Commando, Raw Deal, Predator, The Running Man, Red Heat, Total Recall, Kindergarten Cop, Last Action Hero, True Lies, Eraser, End of Days, highly underrated in my opinion, The Sixth Day, Collateral Damage, The Expendables, The Last Stand, and Escape Plan.
I was debating whether or not to put Kindergarten Cop under that, but it's action-y. It's got some action scenes in there, you know. So there's a couple here under Sylvester Stallone that I'm like kind of, but we'll see. Death Race 2000, the Rocky movies, I'm putting them all together here. Mm-hmm. Nighthawks, the Rambo movies, Cobra, Over the Top, Lockup, Tango and Cash, Cliffhanger, Demolition Man, The Specialist, Judge Dredd, Assassins, Daylight, Copland I might take off because I think that's more of a drama.
Yeah, that feels more of a drama. Yeah.
Get Carter, Driven, which I've never seen. Have you seen Driven, the race car one he did?
I have seen Driven, and I would not call that an action film.
Okay, I'll take that one off then. Avenging Angelo, which I never did see. Is that an action film? Did you ever see that?
I've never seen that.
Okay, I might just take that off. I See You, never did see that either, so I don't know. The Expendable movies, Bullet to the Head, Escape Plan, the Creed movies. Should those be on there, or are those drama?
I would call those more drama. See, with the Rocky films, just real quick, I would think the first two feel more drama and the last two feel more action-y.
I just included all of them. So, and then Guardians of the Galaxy. He doesn't have a large role in that, but it's still kind of action adventure-y. So, So we'll put those on social media, and then we'll come back and let you know who win. And then we will also give our take next Culture Clash on who we think was the better action hero, who had the better action hero career. But Kyle, we still have something in Buy It, Stream It, and See It that I did not share in that section because I wanted to wait until we did this mention.
Oh, so you're surprised? You know I don't like surprises, Kevin.
Well, you'll like this one. So I have a documentary, and I did tag you in it.
Oh, yes.
I recommend everyone see, especially make sure that Adam sees it because, you know, he does a podcast under the Fandom Podcast Network umbrella called Lethal Mullet, where he discusses 80s and early 90s or 90s action films. And I found, and this was a documentary that actually was, there was, I think, a GoFundMe type thing that was going to try and get it done and get it paid for and done. It's finally done. It is out. I believe I saw it on
Amazon Prime,
and it's called In Search of the Last Action Heroes, directed by Oliver Harper. It's a comprehensive retrospect of the 80s action film genre, and they talk about all the different action stars that made their name and all the different types of action films that came out, not just the Schwarzenegger and Stallone ones, but they even talk about the Cannon films and the effect those had, the American Ninja films. And they talk about, they go all the way up through like the early 90s. They had Cynthia Rothrock, you know, the female action hero. And even Scott Adkins, the new kind of B movie action star that I've become a big fan of. And a lot of great people were interviewed. Even Ronnie Cox was interviewed about, you know, his turn in RoboCop and Total Recall. Shane Black, of course, famous for writing the Lethal Weapon films and directing several action years himself. Bill Duke was there. But they also talked to a few of the action movie composers like Brad Fidel, who did like Terminator films and stuff like that. They talked to director Sam Furstenberg, who did a lot of the action films like American Ninja. Jeanette Goldstein, you know, from Aliens and Terminator, you know, played Vasquez. It's about, how long is it? It's about 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's a long documentary.
It's a long documentary, but it's a great watch. I highly recommend it. Check In Search of the Last Action Heroes. If you are a fan of the genre, fan of us, fan of Couch Potato Theater, this is a must-see.
Yeah. Well, I saw that post and I did look it up. I got it in my queue on Amazon Prime. It was just a matter of the length, but definitely going to be checking that out here.
The people that they talk to in this are great, and they give out great insight on a lot of the movies that they were influenced by. Jackie Chan was brought up, of course. Bruce Lee was brought up. And when you start seeing the names of some of these people, you go, oh, yeah. Even Al Leon was in there as well, the famous stuntman and villain of, you know, Die Hard and Lethal Weapon and a bunch of other stuff. And you start seeing even Eric Roberts from Best of the Best, Paul Verhoeven, Vernon Wells, Michael Jai White, even Alex Winter. He was in there as well. So you got to check it out.
Speaking of things to check out too, Kevin, I do want to throw one thing out there. This past weekend on ESPN, who's been doing a lot of really good sports documentaries, Way of Water was a 2-hour documentary in their 30 for 30 series on Bruce Lee.
Way of Water, really?
Yes. If you have ESPN Plus or you have ESPN and can access on demand, watch this documentary. You get some things. I learned a lot I didn't know about Bruce Lee. It focuses on a lot of the things he had to overcome in his career. And a lot of insightful things about Bruce. It's a little bit slow paced at times, but especially in the second half of it, when you start getting into his career after he did Green Hornet and some of the things that he was supposed to do and some of the things that he was in line to do. And it just reminds you how tragic a loss he was, because he was about to be huge when he passed away. But it with the Way the Water, I believe, is the name of it. And yeah, ESPN, like I said, if you have the ESPN Plus app or
is
if
it
you
way
have ESPN,
of water or way,
way
of
water, way of water.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting title. Do they explain that?
Well, because of his talking of always be water, my friend.
Ah, okay. Gotcha.
So if you have ESPN Plus or ESPN On Demand, please check that out. But with that, it's time to get out of here. And you know what? Considering everything that's been going on, I am going to go to the two excellent prophets and just tell you, be excellent to each other. And party on, dudes!
I liked how you called them prophets. I love it.
Enjoy your fandom, everyone.